My wife told me a little story last night that I thought was pretty good. This couple, they were dating for quite some time, and he was thinking about how can he ask her to marry him. And he was scared. He was afraid to do this. So he didn't know how to pop the question. He didn't know how to say this. So one day, him and his girlfriend were walking through the graveyard and observing different family, you know, groups of grave sites. And they came to his family, and he was explaining to her how it was his grandfather's, you know, siblings. And finally, he said, how would you like to be buried beside me? She said, I would love it. So they got married. All right. Well, I'm honored this morning this early in the morning here, just to be able to share with you guys. I really believe, friends, that you are the greatest group of men. You're the best. When I think of men getting up early in the morning and interested in pursuing life, pursuing the issues of life, investing in life, investing in your own life, investing in the life of your wife and your family, you got to be the best. You've got to be the best. So I'm honored to be able to speak to a group of men that I believe is the best. I believe it's your very heart to a desire to learn to be better godly men, to learn to be better godly fathers, to learn to be better godly husbands and employees, and maybe even employers. You're learning what it is that keeps you from being the man that God designed you to be. And we're talking about some of the pain, some of the wounds, some of those things that have impacted us through life and keep us from moving forward, discovering what some of those issues are. And you're willing to look at them and embrace them. I've worked with numbers of people who are aware of the issues but aren't willing to face them. Rather just keep on keeping on, you know. So I just applaud you this morning for being willing to stand up and to be the man that God calls you to be. Friends, there's a resource in this auditorium this morning that I believe is the most untapped resource in our churches today. Society around us has moved into a mentality that says, I do not need you. In other words, I can do it on my own. And when we set out on a journey to prove it, we do it by ourselves. We do it alone. And last week when Frank Reed was here, he talked about the alone wound. How we live alone without other people around us and without other people involved in our lives. You don't want to be rejected or hurt, so we set out on a journey to prove that we don't want people to say about us. And I just want you to hang on to that. We want to prove to others what we don't want others to say about us. We don't want to be rejected or hurt, so we avoid the pain. Now, it doesn't matter what age you are this morning. There is someone in your life that you can come alongside of and encourage in the journey. The youngest here this morning has someone in his life who can impart truth, direction, or encouragement in a life of another. So there's no one excluded this morning. We all have someone in our circle of influence that is younger that we can impart life's experiences with. Now, I'll tell you a little bit of my own story. When I was in my teens, 20s, I thought older men... Hang on, guys. I thought older men that were in their 50s, 60s, even some of those in their 40s, didn't have a lot to offer me. I was one that wanted to kind of set my own course, and I didn't have a lot of people speaking into my life. Well, that has changed, because now I'm in that age group, 40, 50, 60, all right? I'll let you decide where I fall in there, all right? And there's something that I discovered when I start reaching these mature ages. hope you understand that. But there's something I discovered, that life's experiences, and I learned this in the counseling room, I've also learned that gray hair has value. But there's something about being older that younger men are asking, tell me your story. Tell me, how do I handle this issue, and how do I handle this part in life? And I found out that my own life's journey, things that I've learned, sometimes by the hard knocks, okay, and things that I've learned by experience, that others want to know so they can avoid and they can learn from what I've learned in life. And I tell you, friends, I am enjoying this time of my life. I really am. The opportunity to be able to speak into other people's lives, younger people's lives. And I want to say this. I'm going to tell you part of my story. It was about 1981, I think it was. I heard about Northern Youth Programs, Claire Snoop. How many of you know Claire Snoop? Sure. I heard about them, and I'm one of these guys that's inquisitive. I like to try new things. I like to discover. I like to meet new people. And so we said, well, let's take a trip to NYP, and I'd like to learn about the mission up there. I had no clue who they were. I had no clue where I'm going. Just decided to do it. And we took a friend and their family along, Levi and Emma Rubiger. How many know Levi and Emma? Yep. He's going to be here in about 2 weeks. Took them along. Our children were small. I think our children, oldest might have been about 10 at the time. And we embarked on a trip to Northern Youth. I was in the parts business then already, and I took a lot of parts along. So we worked on cars up there. They had one Pinto. You know, y'all know what a Pinto is? Ford Pinto? Yeah, all right. Well, they had a couple of them up there, and one of them was, they had a 2.5-gallon jug of oil in the back so they could keep it running. All right, so we pulled the engine out of that and overhauled it, and I put exhaust on, put brakes on, and we're working up there and just having a good time. One day, Claire came to us, and he said he would like to do a family life seminar with Levi's and ourselves. Family life seminar? And what happened was, he's been doing family life seminars for some time, and he had just completed videotaping all the sessions. And what he would like to do, what he would like to have had, was an audience, and where he can teach some of it live, and he can teach some of it by video. And we were sitting ducks. I didn't need no family life seminar. Our family's doing fine. You hear what I'm saying? Ever been there? Yeah. I don't need others' input. I don't need other people telling me. I don't need their ideas. You know what I'm saying? I can do it. I'm doing just fine. But we wanted to be nice to Claire. So what do you do? We said, okay, we'll do your family life seminar. And we did. And I want to tell you something, friends. It changed my life. It changed the direction of our family. And I remember sitting there with Claire over in the chapel, Beaver Lake Camp, with Claire. And Claire just sharing his passion, sharing his heart. And let me tell you a little bit about Claire. Claire had been in mission since a teenager, his late teens. Married in the mission field, started Northern Youth Programs. His family was in missions, that's all his children knew. And he was running into some struggles with his children. And I think I have the story straight that one time his wife, Clara, couldn't take it anymore. And I think she went home to her parents for a little bit. And she told Clara, when you're willing to get help, that I'm willing to come back. And Clara went to Clyde and Aramore, Southern California, and got help for his marriage. And it changed their family, changed their life. Because Clara was willing to listen to input from someone else, a third person who was looking from the outside in, and said, "This is what I'm seeing." And I'm ever so grateful to Claire and Clara for their mentoring that they've done to me and my family. And so when I think of mentoring, friends, I get excited. Because I have had many men speak into my life over the years. I was in a business I came off a dairy farm and went into the parts business. Now, do you know how well parts business relates to dairy farming? It was a career change for me, a huge career change. I knew nothing about the parts business. I'd been in a hardware store some years before, but I knew nothing about the parts business. And I've had men come alongside of me and explain to me and teach me and help me to know how to run a parts business. And I've been ever so grateful to those men. They were not within the church. They were within the industry. And that have helped me lots. And I'm so thankful for them. And so when I think of mentoring, coming alongside of me, men that have spoken to my life, men that have impacted me with their life's journey, with their life's experience, Claire is only one of those. There was numbers of them. And I'm here to tell you this morning that I trust, I hope, that you have men that are speaking into your life. That you're listening to men speaking into your life. Walter Beachy is with us at Martindale right now. If you want to listen to Walter Beachy, he's 75 years of age, a man that has a wealth of information, who has studied history, who has been the director of Rosedale Bible Institute for some years. I remember meeting Walter years ago back at Indiantown. He was probably in his 30s or 40s, and he told the story how that he was farming with his brother or brothers, I don't remember, and God called him into the ministry. They had a large farming operation. They had all the big tractors. They had all the big equipment. And it come to the place where Walter, because of his involvement in ministry, and he was becoming involved in Rosedale Bible Institute, sold his shares out of the partnership and went back to farming himself. And this is what he said. He said, "We had the big IH tractors, and I don't remember if they had a 1206 or an 806, and some of you older men that have been involved in farming know what a 1206 and 806 is, all right? Most of you don't. But that's what they had, the biggest tractors IH made at the time. And he said, "I went back to plowing with my 560. But you know what? That stuck with me. That stuck. He was willing to give up his dream, what he enjoyed so much, because of his call to the church. Today, Walter, I love to hear him speak. He comes with such a broad world view. He's been in so many countries around the world. He's worked with so many different people, and he just comes up with a wealth of experience and information that he'd have never gotten if he had not been willing to break the partnership with his brothers and invest in ministry. his own church at United Bethel and Rosedale Mennonite Bible Institute. But he invested in people. And I love to sit underneath him. I really do. He was a man. There's people like that that have spoken to my life that had given me a different perspective. I never forgot what Walter said. And there were times that I had to walk away. From parts of my life that I really enjoyed. Because God was calling us somewhere else. But it was a man like that that spoke into my life. By example. By example. That helped form and shape who I am today. So we want to think about mentors this morning. Dad, this is part two, I think, in your book, exploring this rich concept called mentoring. From dad to whom? First one is, dad can only take you so far. Every son comes to a point in his life where he wants to go on in his own journey, and dad can't go with him. Now, the other side of this, friends, is there comes a time as parents, there comes a time as dads, that we need to turn our son loose. We need to turn our sons over and allow them to be mentored, allow them to be have their life spoken into by somebody else other than ourselves. I remember my son, he was about 17, 18, he graduated from high school, and I was involved in the parts business, and of course I would have liked if he'd have joined me in the parts business and helped me there, but you know what I did for him? I told him, I said, you go work for somebody else a while. You go work for somebody else. I'd like to have someone else speak into your life. I'd like to have someone else show you what life is like outside of dad. And he did. And I'm thinking he's about 18 or 19 years of age. I remember he came to me one day and said, Dad, I'm ready to work for you. Oh, I loved it. But you know what? Those years that he had other men, other people speak into his life, where he found out what it's like to work for another employer other than myself, to learn to know what it is to be on the authority of someone other than his dad. Those are valuable years for him. And I'm saying that dads can only take us so far. There are times I believe that we as men, we as fathers, need to be able to turn our sons loose and launch them. Dad can only take you so far. Male mentors are specialists. These are men who expand and enrich a young man's life. These specialists are often for a reason, or rather for a season. They're only for a period of time. And when I look back at my own journey, my own life, I see men who spoke into me for a season, just for a period of time. One comes to me right now, Marty Weber. How many of you know Marty Weber? He was a man that I believe that pioneered prison ministry in the Mennonite Church. A lot of respect for Marty. And I remember going down there, and I remember going into the prison the first time. Oh, those are rich times. And Marty coming alongside and just encouraging us and just, you know, helping us through it and helping us how to relate and just teaching us. He was a mentor to me. But it's for a season. It was for a time. And so these are men that come into our lives that are specialists. They're someone who have experience oftentimes in a certain field, or maybe just in a certain area that you're looking for some help. And so they're just for a short period of time, for a season. Male mentors are specialists. These mentors empower a young man with resources and wisdom that is often outside of the father's ability. In other words, when I sent my son away and asked him to work for somebody else and give him some other experience, there's only so much that I could teach him. I only know so much, all right? And so I gave him an opportunity to be under somebody else's tutorage, to be under learning from someone else, and in special areas. He was working at a repair facility for a while. And for a while, he had worked as a carpenter, as wheeling concrete. And that was a good experience for him. He used to come home. This is back when he was 15 or 16. He'd come home so tired that he went to bed at 6 o'clock in the evening. Dad never made him do that, see? He never had to do that for Dad. But it was something about being under somebody else's tutorage and somebody else's authority. And he learned lessons, I believe, that I could have never have taken him. This is the role of a mentor, to carry on the training and empowering that a dad has already begun. It's adding to what you have done as a father. We all need other men in our lives. Five comments about a mentor. He is one who supports rather than competes with you. Someone who walks alongside of you and encourages you and gives you ideas as to how you can improve and how you can look at issues differently and not it with competition. He's also one who primarily is a cheerleader and not a critic, and this is important. A mentor is one who dwells on what is right about you, not what is wrong. And so I'm talking this morning to young men who may be looking for someone who to be a mentor. I'm also talking to older men who could be a mentor to a younger person, okay? So I'm talking to both spectrums, and I realize that. You are one who is a cheerleader, not a critic. You're not there to criticize everything they do wrong, but rather you are to be a cheerleader, someone who encourages, someone who finds the strengths, pulls them out, and helps them build on. One of the things that Claire taught me years ago, he said, you build on your strengths and make war on your weaknesses. I love that. We build on our strengths and we make war on our weaknesses. And I say a mentor is not, we'll come to later, it's not like discipleship. A mentor is someone who builds on the strengths of the young person, okay, of the young individual. A mentor is the one who sees the potential in you and wants to help you develop this potential further and empower you to do it, to further help you in your gifts and abilities, and wants to breathe life into you. Young men, I tell you, friends, there's enough of death out there. There's enough of people speaking death into young men. They don't need to hear it from the mentors. What they need to hear from you is words of life. Pull out the strengths. Man, you got what it takes. You can do this. How many of you would like a man like that in your life? Yeah. Hold your hands up. Now, older men, look around. Look around. He is one who seeks to encourage the development of your gifts while seeking to protect you from the costly mistakes. When I sit with young people, and I do some business kinds of work, and I do some kind of a variety of kinds of things with people, and you know, there are times that I need to say, well, this is what I learned from life's experience. This is what life taught me. And it's not to criticize them, but it's to give them a window into, if you do it this way, this will probably be the result. Okay? And it's a result that you don't want. So we're not being a critic, but it's only from life's experiences as a means of protecting them from experiencing what I had to go through. That's the privilege of a mentor. He is one who admires and delights in you because he instinctively recognizes your value and untapped potential. Yeah. There's something about a mentor who can see beyond what you can see, who sees the gifts that you have, who sees the potential that you have, who sees the abilities that you have, who sees the gifts that you have, and can speak into them for your value and untapped potential. He's also, there should have been another one here, I thought. Number five. Is there five here somewhere? All right, I don't see it on here. Let's do it this way. Number five is, he is not necessarily a close friend, but a confidant. One of the things that young men are going to look from their mentor is that they can share their, can I just be blunt and say their guts? You know what I mean when I say that? They need someone, some place where they can just let it spill out. And I have men, women coming into my office quite often, and after a while we're talking together, and they're saying, all of a sudden they stop and they say, I never told anybody what I'm telling you. You know what's happening? I make it very clear at the very beginning of this session that what you tell me stays here. These four walls are soundproof. The door is soundproof. What you tell me in here stays in here. And I ask for permission to tell certain parts of their story or to tell certain parts of, but I only do that with their permission, and they know that. And you know what? It becomes a safe place to be able to express and put to words parts of their life that they haven't shared with anyone. Now, I talk about a mentor, about Claire being a mentor to me. I want to tell you a little story in our life. We were probably married 20 years. I'm not married much more than that, but, you know. We were probably married about 20 years. We got a phone call. My wife had just taken the course from Susquehanna Valley Pregnancy Center services to be a crisis home. Like when they have young girls that discover they're pregnant and they go to the center and they can't go home, parents won't allow them back home. We had trained to be a place of placement. And so we just finished that. And we got a phone call, and it was a young mother who had an acquaintance. And she was about 22 years of age. And she had just given birth to her first child. She was still in the hospital. She was from Philadelphia. We never met the lady. That's all we knew. Would you take her in? And my wife and I had made it a ministry of ours to reach out to people, especially those that find themselves in desperate situations. And we said we would. This lady came with her baby. I'm trying to think how old our children were at the time. April was about 7, I think, somewhere around there. This lady came, and I mean, she came with baggage that I didn't know what to do with. I had no clue. I was, and it happened that Claire was in the area, so I called Claire and I said, would you come over and spend some time with us and this lady? And Claire came over, and we had lunch together, and then we sat down. Her name is Anna Marie. We sat down with Anna Marie, and he started counseling her, and I had the privilege to sit right alongside of Claire and observe. I'm talking about Claire being a mentor to me. Claire has taught me lots, and I'll say a little bit more later. But he began counseling with Anna Marie, and we were into it probably 20 minutes, half an hour, and all of a sudden Anna Marie said, she just stopped, and she said, why am I telling you these things? I haven't told anybody what I'm telling you. And I observed right beside Claire how to sit with people. It was confidential. I'll just say this much about our relationship with Anne Marie. She's still a friend of our family. Has 4 children, married. We still have connections, almost weekly. I am so grateful to Claire to help me think through. One of the things he said, she'd gone up to check on the baby, and she said, Glenn, I want you to know that sometime you're going to come home, and she's going to be gone. I said, gone? Yeah. I said, well, we're giving her everything a person could want. He said, that's right. But he said, I'll tell you something, it's too quiet around here. She's used to noise. She's used to radios blaring, TVs blaring, yelling, screaming. It's too quiet around here. She can't go be able to handle it. And he was right. About 6 weeks later, she was gone. If I wouldn't have had Claire speak into my life and tell me that ahead of time, I'd have blamed myself. We didn't do it right. We did this wrong. We did that wrong. I was so thankful for Claire, for the opportunity, for that window of time, just a couple hours, for Claire to mentor me and to prepare me for what lies ahead. There was about a 2-year period in between there where we didn't hear from her, and one day we got a phone call. Would you reconsider? Mentors, confidants, a place where it's safe, a place where you can, where there's trust. And so a mentor is someone who is not necessarily a close friend. Remember, I said a mentor is just for a season, and you may become a friend, you may not become a friend, but it's a place of safety. It's a place of with this confidence. Well, is mentoring different than relationships? Mentoring is more than about helping someone to develop their potential. That's what mentoring is. Discipleship is also helping someone develop their potential, but discipleship helps one develop their spiritual gifts and has a spiritual core to its base. So what I'm saying in this is that mentorship and discipleship are two different entities. Mentorship is, I said again earlier, it's about drawing people out and what you can offer them. Well, what does mentoring bring to the table? Mentoring brings experience, wisdom through experience. A mentor is one who can say, I have been there. Now, I want to caution something here. There's a tendency for us to say, when someone is sharing something like a hard experience, to say, you know what, I know what you're talking about. Is that a true statement? No. No. Generally, it's not. You may have had something similar, but you are not experiencing what that individual is experiencing at that moment. Saying that I've been there, you know, I've had something similar to that is much more healthy. But to say that I hear that so often. I'm in a circle of people, and someone's sharing something that they're dealing with in life, and somebody says, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. No, you don't. You know it from your perspective, but you do not know it from their perspective. Now, there is a certain sense in which you can identify, all right? But you cannot honestly say that I know exactly what you're talking about. You can say, you know, I've been close. I've been there. You bring a wealth of experience. Warnings. Out of your own experience, they can tell you what it was really like. They will not hold back about telling you their experiences of their own journey. And I've learned in working with people that one of the biggest gifts that I have is to tell them my own life's journey, my own life's experience. They want to talk to somebody who's warm, who has red blood flowing up and down their veins, who has been through some of the same experiences they're facing. They want to hear it from you. And then they can adapt, you know, to their own experience and how that fits. And so there are times that you want to bring warnings. There's a belief in you. We all need someone to believe in us. Even when you find it hard to believe in yourself. You know, Jesus, I like to use this experience, this little clip here. When Jesus came up out of the water at his baptism, do you remember what happened? There was a voice from heaven. First there was a dove that lighted, and then there was a voice from heaven which said, "This is my Son, in whom I am well pleased." Why did Jesus have to hear that? Why did God say that? Was it for everybody else, or was it for Jesus? I believe it was for Jesus. His Father was affirming him. This is my beloved Son. A place to belong, who he's loved by, and who believes in him, in whom I am well pleased. Every son needs to hear that from their father. There's a belief that they receive from their mentor. The story is told of a young man back in 1800s, I believe, started two businesses, failed two businesses, had borrowed money from his uncles to start those businesses, lost the money, got on a train, headed back to Lancaster, got off the train, walked to his uncle's house, apologized for losing the money that they had entrusted him with, and then he said he had another idea that he'd like to pursue, and would they believe in him, and would they trust him one more time? And his uncles got mad. They said, "We're not giving you any more money. You're a worthless, good-for-nothing, you know, da-da-da." And they wouldn't even let him sleep there for the night. He had to walk back to Lancaster late at night, find a place to sleep. The next morning, he went to several banks, and finally one banker said, I will loan you $700. I'll loan you $700. But you got to pay it back to me in 90 days. So I'm going to give you $700 for 90 days. Do you know who that man is? Hershey, Milton Hershey. Yep. Somebody believed in him. I go back to our story with Anna Marie. We believed in her. And if I just have to wonder where Anna Marie would be today if we would not have invested in her. Somebody believes in you. And you need that. You need to hear that. Someone who cheers for your achievement. He's someone who puts his hand on your shoulder and commends you for a job well done. You can feel the life coming into you. You hear his words of life and encouragement. We all need that. In some instances, a proven hero. I told you earlier, here we go. I'm fighting the clock already, but I'm going to tell you this story. Claire Snoop has become a hero to me. And I'll tell you why. How many of you know that Claire flies a Piper Cheyenne, a twin turboprop plane at 75 years of age? It does. I'm a former pilot, all right? There's a lot of men that are 75 years old, and you know what they're doing? Do you know what a shuffleboard stick is? Yeah. And Clara has given me a perspective about the age that I'm in that I appreciate today. I don't believe there's a word called retirement. I don't believe that. I can't find it in the scripture. And it grieves me when I see older men, older persons who have basically given up on life. Life has nothing to offer, and I have nothing to give. They're wrong. And they waste away the last numbers of years of their life playing shuffleboard or chase the rat. You know what I'm saying? Claire's taught me that. He's a hero. Now I'm going to tell you something else Claire did. Claire had a passion for the Arctic regions, the Greenland, Inuit, Alaska, the Arctic Circle. And he also recognized that there was a lot of people in those regions that were suffering from incest and all the stuff that was going on, alcoholism, suicide, just a host of stuff. What did he do? I don't know if he's 40s or 50s. He went back to college and got his doctorate, not his master's. He got his doctorate in psychology. He's actually a professor under Providence Theological Seminary in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And Claire developed a 10-point program to train men and women to counsel. I am a recipient of that course. I graduated from that course. That's my hero. That's my man. And your mentor needs to become your hero. Someone that you can trust. Someone, I'm getting ahead of myself here, but let's just keep traveling. What are you really accomplishing here? Why are you trying to do all this alone when everyone stands around you from morning until evening? You're going to wear yourself out and the people too. This job is too heavy a burden for you to handle all by yourself. Now listen to me and let me give you a word of advice. We loved you so much that we shared with you not only God's good news, but our own lives too. This is the words of Paul. Let me move on. For the mentor, maybe I should say just a little bit about that. There are a lot of scriptural stories where there were mentors, Jethro and Moses for one. Jethro, his father-in-law, came to Moses one day, and when he was judging the people, they were standing in line waiting all day for Moses to judge him, and Moses was the only one. And Jethro said, "You're going to wear yourself out." That's what those verses were from. And he said, "Why don't you organize, you know, judges for 50, judges for 100, judges for him?" And he set it all up. And he said, "You only take the hard cases." You know what? Not only did Moses survive, but the people did too. It was a blessing. It was because Moses was willing to listen to someone to give him some direction, a mentor, that he was able to bless the people. Well, for us as mentors now, 10 marks of a good mentor. Let's see what's here. Okay, there's another section in here, section 4. Some of these aren't in here, it feels like, Anthony. Anyway, let me just go through this quickly. Number 4, 10 marks of a good mentor. And I'll just run through it. This man clearly has what you personally need. Now, these are not going to be on the overhead or on the projector. That's letter A. Letter B, he chooses to cultivate a relationship with you. Hope you can follow me here. He is willing to take a chance on you. Do you guys know where I'm at? Are you following me? Okay. Letter D, he's respected by other men. And that's important. When you, as a younger person, you choose someone to be a mentor, may it be someone who's respected in the community, who has earned the respect of the community. It's very important that the mentor in your life is well respected by other men. You know he is the real deal, all right? Letter E, he has a network of resources. In other words, because of life's experiences and where he's been and where all he's traveled, he has resources for you to draw from that will be a help to you. Letter E, he is consulted by others. In other words, you're not the only one that's knocking on his door. So just beware of that, all right? He's going to be consulted by others. He both talks and listens. And the book has it, talks and listens. If I would write that, I would say he listens and talks. There's a difference, all right? There's a big difference. I took a course here just not too long ago on coaching. And one of the things that the instructor said was that you haven't heard or you haven't listened until you've heard. And you can't hear until the person is finished talking. All right? He said, if you formed an opinion before the person's done talking, you haven't listened. So it's going to be someone who both talks and listens. He is consistent in his lifestyle, letter H. He is able to diagnose your real needs. In other words, there's insight. Letter J, he is concerned with your interests. Now, going on to number five, the impact of mentoring for a mentor. Closes the loop on a man's life cycle. And this is actually directed toward the mentors, toward us older ones. There's something about closing the loop of your life, the last phase of your life, when you can speak into other people. It brings meaning, it brings purpose, it brings fulfillment. It does. And so it closes the loop. Connects older and younger men in a mutually beneficial relationship. Number three, allows a man to teach naturally from experience, which younger men desperately need and want. Now, you heard what I said when I told you the story about Claire coming to and wanted to do this family life seminar. I said, I don't need it. I'm doing just fine. What I was really saying was that I don't want to be exposed. I don't want to hear where I'm failing my family, where I'm failing my children, where I'm failing my wife. I'm just okay the way I am. And I'm saying that for a mentor. It allows men to teach naturally from experience, which younger men desperately need and want. Gives older men a significant purpose in the second half of their life. Adds a missing satisfaction to an older man's life. Well, it is quarter of, and I don't like to take away from your one-on-one time, your group time. The answers to the rest of the questions are in the back of the book. If you have any questions about mentoring, I'd be glad to sit down with you and discuss it with you. I just want to say this to you older men. You have an opportunity of a lifetime. An opportunity of a lifetime to speak into younger men. Younger men, don't do like I did. Don't say I can go this on my own. Don't say that I don't need your help, because I did. And I'm so thankful for the people that spoke into my life. Three cheers for mentors. Thank you. Bless you.